Today we're welcoming anybody who's been, we come for the first time particularly, and one of the ways that we do that normally and traditionally is to say, peace be with you. Peace be with you. And the minister would normally say, peace be with you. And you would respond, and with you also. Okay? And with you also. Okay, I'll try that again. Peace be with you. Okay, that's a traditional way of beginning a sermon, and that's so that we do indeed have the peace and grace, as Marty was saying, of Jesus Christ with us as we start to consider what we've just heard. So if you are here for the first time, welcome. If you haven't been for a little while, welcome back. And in a way, these services over this, communions over this year, are really all of us coming back or returning to something. And the reason is that it's the 500th anniversary of the Reformation, and that is a way of us now turning back, looking back and seeing what are the things in the past that we have perhaps forgotten and need to renew in our lives, and what are some of the things that we can bring back or make our own again. And we're looking at some of these things here. I'll look at one or two things here this morning. And I hope two of you might have got their little invitation that we prepared. Welcome you to this service, and some of our folk took those and gave it to friends and family. And that comes from an old tradition. Can we have the first slide, the image? What are they? No, not coins. They're not actually coins. They are communion tokens. John knows. And perhaps Sulan and a few of the older folk even might remember these. And in the old days, the old days of pre-Second World War, the communion token was given to people, inviting them to come to communion. Communion in Presbyterian churches were once every 4 months, so four times a year. Once every 3 months, four times a year. And that was the time in which people came together as a church family to celebrate the communion. Today we do it once a month, and in Anglican churches and Catholic churches it's every week. But it's once a month for us, and it was once every 4 or 3 months for Presbyterian churches. And the reason for that was they wanted a time in which they could reflect between communions on what it meant to be a Christian and to build up faith and community. And so the next time they came, they could celebrate all the good things that God has done for us in that intervening period. So during communion, for the second thing I just want to, old tradition I want to sort of look back on, is I bought this today, and we'll wear this at communion. What is this? And the minister put it on like that. And what is that down there? The Celtic cross, right? And what that reminds us of, it's a cross with a sun behind it. And that's probably easier to see from where you are. And what it was taking was the rising sun and the cross put onto it. And so Jesus is the sun, the rising sun in our lives. He is the resurrected sun, S-U-N, but also S-O-N. He shines on our lives. And it's a kind of play on words in English too, of sun and sun. The sun, the risen sun, Jesus Christ, shines on our lives, but only because he has died for us on the cross. And so during communion, I will put that on, and that will help us, I hope, to reflect on what it means to say that Jesus Christ is the Son of God. But I just want to focus on the tokens for a moment, because I think there was a slightly, not negative, but I think something that we really need to reflect on. The elders would give it to the people who they considered to be worthy to receive the communion. The people they considered in the church community who would be worthy, who've come to church regularly, who in their life display the qualities of Jesus Christ. There's nothing wrong with that, of course, but they were making judgments about who was worthy to come. But the whole point of communion really is that we're not worthy to come. We make mistakes, and we fall short of the glory of God. Every one of us does that. And as I was thinking about that, I was just thinking about playing chess. because during the week, on every Monday night, I go and play chess and in High Street. And a lot of Russians have come along. Now, if you know Russians playing chess, you get a very competent group of people who have learnt it at school, they've learnt all the theory, and you get thrashed. I have yet to win against some of them. I'll admit, I've yet to draw against them, and indeed lost regularly to them. And so I've come to expect to lose, but that doesn't mean it's not fun. But some people don't come to church because they feel that they have been thrashed, they have been beaten or put down or made to feel embarrassed. And you all know how you can lose a chess match in 4 moves? Right. Okay, can we just see the video? The first one.
Hi, a quick video this time. It's going to be Napoleon opening. It's such a move. Everything is okay, but now there is a threat. And if black doesn't see it, it sometimes really works. For example, if black plays now like this to attack white queen, then there is a very nice checkmate in 4. Thanks for watching. Bye.
Okay. So it is very embarrassing when that happens, right? Very embarrassing. And when we come to church, I think sometimes people may be feel dumb, or that they don't know who Jesus Christ is, or they feel out like fish out of water. So one of the things that I want to say, if you feel like that, that's not ACPC. We don't put people down because they make mistakes. It's perfectly fine to make mistakes. And in coming to the communion, what we do is admit that we make mistakes, that we have failed God and fallen short, and we come knowing that He has forgiven us. Before I look at the text, I'd just like to look at three sayings from chess. And I think I just want to bring these to the table, literally, so to speak, because these are important biblical insights as well as insights from chess. Let's have the first one. The first of the PowerPoint slides, if that's all right. Yeah. Oh, that's right. Today we are, just to focus on that, we are remembering the body of Christ. And the word remembering means put back together again. Remember, put the members back together again. So today we are coming together as one body in Jesus Christ. And we are remembering what happened that first night, but we're also becoming members again of each other, of the body of Christ. Next one. Never underestimate the power of the pawn. The pawn is the weakest and the most insignificant, so it seems, of the chess pieces. It is far less powerful than the queen or any of the others, and yet it makes a great deal of difference. And it is the power of the pawn can win games. And so today, as we come, we may not feel that we have a particularly important part in the church or a particularly important role or a particularly much grace or power to offer, but we are important. And the power of the ordinary person, the ordinary Christian, is immense. Number 2. At the end of the game, the king and the pawn go back in the same box. And that's an Italian proverb. At the end of the game, the king and the pawn go back into the same box. And at the end of the passage, Jesus is talking about, they ask, who is the greatest? Who's going to be number one, both here and in the kingdom of heaven? And Jesus says, in the end of the game, you're all going to go back in the same box. In the kingdom of heaven, there is no top dogs and underdogs. There are only those who serve and only those who are one with each other. And what we do today here is not say there are some who are kings and queens and pawns. We say we are one body, one people in Jesus Christ. And so whether we're talking about heaven or on earth, we are talking about being one people in Jesus Christ, all the same in His sight. And last one. Every pawn is a potential queen. What does that mean? Every pawn is a potential queen. if we continue on the path that God has given us and leads us, those eight steps up, and if we make it to that other rank, the eighth line, then we become a queen. That's in chess. But also in Jesus Christ, we fulfill our potential. We are the ones who God empowers. And as we grow in him, and as we grow in our faith, we see that God moves in us, and we become a, in chess terms, a queen. In Christian terms, a disciple full of the grace and power of Jesus Christ. So, for we learn a little bit from chess, I think, about what it means to be the people of God. We are people who make mistakes, but we are also people who are forgiven and who are people who are led to fulfill their potential, all their potential that God has given us and will give us, providing we remember his words and providing we come together, we are remembered as his people. As we look at the passages of in the Bible about the communion, and we looked at the one in 1 Corinthians, and there's this one and there's the one in the other Gospels, well, particularly Matthew, where Jesus describes these words, I use these as exact words. This is my body broken for you. And when you look at the context of it, it's really important to grasp what he's saying. Part of the problem, well, not problem, part of the task of a minister really is to say those words, as beautiful as they are also surrounded by other words which have dramatic meaning for us. And when we looked at 1 Corinthians, we saw how those words, this is my body broken for you, were preceded by people fighting over who got the best food on the table. People not thinking about each other. People being gluttons, basically. And we also saw that it was a class society of people bringing the equivalent of caviar and oysters and lobster over against people who could only afford sandwiches and scones. And so people were bringing food but not sharing. And so the context of that first, the words of institution, as we say, the Holy Communion, those great words, was in fact a very human battle of over who got the best food. And so we see a God-instituted, divinely prepared supper for us, delivered to us in the context of a very human fight over food. What is the context in this message? What happens? What did Celia read that prior to this? And there are three little points that I really want to make here about this passage. What happened before they actually sat down and had supper? What did Jesus say to Peter and John? He said, go into the city and make preparations. And how were they to do that? It'd be like saying to them here in Auckland, go into Aotea Centre, wait there until you see a guy carrying some guy carrying a jar of water, talk to him and he'll show you how to do it. How would you feel if you were Peter and John? Just go into Aotea Centre, just along here, and just hang around until you see this guy carrying a jar of water, and then everything will be fine. It sounds a wee bit wild and wacky that they would actually do that. But the interesting thing is that they've got to the stage, I think, where they trust Jesus, that this, in fact, will happen. He didn't say, you know, look up on Google, Trivago, book a place, make sure you've got a good restaurant, make sure there's enough places in the restaurant for us, and make sure there's the, they're actually selling lamb at that time. You know, he doesn't go into all those details, saying to them, make sure that all is organized and do all the proper preparations and make the bookings. No, just wait for this guy carrying the jar of water and he'll have it all organized. So that shows two things. One, it shows, the fact they just go and do it. So at this stage, even though they're imperfect, they make mistakes, they just trust Jesus. They just go and look for this guy carrying a jar of water in at the gates of the city or in Aotea Square in Queen Street. They just wait, and it happens. The other thing it shows is that Jesus actually did have everything organized, that at this crucial part of his life, he knows what's going to happen, and he's got it organized. He's totally in control. And it's this balance between Jesus, who has it all organized, he's got it prepared despite all that's coming, and the trust of these imperfect but faithful servants of his, disciples of his. That's really quite impressive, I think. And that's part of what Luke is telling us here, is that Jesus is in control and that his disciples have faithful. The second thing I just want to point out very briefly here in this passage is Judas. Now, Judas is still at the table. He knew perfectly well which one it is, which of the disciples, but he didn't kick him out. Judas is still there. Jesus is still invited to be at the table, and he takes part, and his hand is on the same table as Jesus. And Jesus points that out. So Jesus gives Judas every chance right to the very end. And right to the very end, Judas could say no. Judas could accept Jesus as Lord. But he continues right to the end and betrays him. And so at this table, we have the story of an offering to Judas, not to betray him, but to turn to him instead. So it's never too late. It is too late, actually, after he makes the final decision and goes. But it is never too late for us. We can always come to this table. We are invited, no matter what we've done and who we are. So, Judas has his place, and we have a place. If Judas has a place at the table, we certainly do have a place, every one of us. None of us has gone so far that we cannot come to this table, not one. And so the third and final thing is right at the end here, is what do they start talking about at the end? They go back to being thoroughly all human. Who's going to be top dog in this place? They have the privilege of being with Jesus Christ. It kind of goes to their heads, I think. And they kind of think, wow, we do see we are going to be at top table in heaven. We are the ones who Jesus Christ has given the responsibility of inviting people, of being the leaders, of serving at the top table. And just to say briefly, when we're in Oxford, the top table in Magdalen College is really quite something. And you know, the rector of the university is there, and they all come in and they say the grace in Latin, and everybody looks up to the top table as these eminent professors in the second or first best university in the world sitting there. You're sort of trembling a little bit so that you don't make a gaffe by dropping your spoon or something. So, you know, you see these guys up there, and that's what they're imagining they will be. But who's going to be right in the middle? And that's kind of the image that you get here. These guys are starting to think, which of us is going to be number one? And in fact, it's not going to be any of them, because the whole image is in wrong. And one of the things when we come to the table is to think again, what is our image of heaven? What does it mean to say there is no top table? We are here together. We're serving each other. There is no rector of the university. There is no servant. We're all serving each other. And so I just want to finish with a video that goes back to my childhood. I don't know about you, John, or others, about what it means to be not top dog, but top cat. The top cat in the church. Can we just show the video?
Top cat, the most effectual top cat. Intellectual close friends get to call him TC, proclaiming it's with dignity. Top cat, the indisputable leader of the gang. He's the boss, he's a bit, he's a championship, he's the most tip-top, top cat. Yes, he's the chief, he's the king, but above everything, he's the most tip-top.
Does everyone remember that cartoon? Yeah, there's a few people. Top Cat, and he always used his wits to keep to be the top of the pack of these alley cats, and he always beat the Officer Dibble and those kind of restaurants. He would always manage to win his way through. But that's not the image that we don't want to be a top cat. And so the last two slides. It's okay to make mistakes. We acknowledge them, learn from them, and we don't need to beat ourselves up. Why? Because God has forgiven us. God has forgiven us. is not sat us down in front of a parole board and reluctantly let us out of jail, saying, heaven help us, help you if you do it again. Right? We're not being on parole. God has forgiven us, and he has wiped the slate clean to start again. And last one. There are no TC top cats in the church. There are only cool cats serving each other. Right. There are only cool cats serving each other. So you are all cool cats, okay, today. And we are cool cats because Jesus has forgiven us and made us clean and made us forgiven us and invited us to this table. Amen. Right.
Okay, I'm going to ask.